thinking of something that you can reduce. I'm sure you can figure it out. It comes out of hoses and kitchen faucets and other kinds of spouts. You can keep it cold in an ice cube mold. In the shower you can make it hotter. You can't lose when you use less of our planet's water. Recycle, reuse, reduce. It's not that hard to do. A change is made every day by people just like you. Recycle, reuse, reduce. Recycle, reuse, reduce. Recycle, reuse, reduce. Recycle, reuse, reduce.
This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And you're listening to Ecotopia, a weekly program exploring ecosystems, environmental, social, and technological. I'm Stephen Chudy.
And I'm Susan Chudy. Our topic tonight is serious fun. It's taken from the book title of our first guest, Berkeley author environmentalist Carolyn North, who argues that doing the right thing for the planet can also be amusing, entertaining, and highly creative.
And in the second half of the program, we'll extend that idea by talking with Marley Zalay and Desi Hatton of the RARE Project at CSU Chico. It's a demonstration center that shows people imaginative ways to engage in recycling.
Ecotopia is made possible in part by member contributions and by the Chico Artisans Fair, celebrating its 40th anniversary on Saturday, April 30th, and Sunday, May 1st. There will be artists and craftspersons from across the country, as well as food and entertainment. Admission is free, starting at 10 a.m. both days in the Chico Downtown Plaza. For more information, call 345-9652. And we're also brought to you by Alternative Energy Systems, a locally owned and operated partnership providing energy for life, with sustainable energy available on the web at www.solarenergyforlife.com. Alternative Energy Systems offers energy solutions for residential, commercial, and agricultural needs. They can be reached by calling 345-6980.
The opinions voiced on Ecotopia do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or programmers. We'll take a short break and be back to talk with Carolyn North about serious fun. That's the Junkman, Donald Knack, playing a variety of recycled instruments. The tune is Reduce, Reuse, Recycle. And you're listening to Ecotopia on KZFR. Tonight, our topic is serious fun. And with us on the phone is Carolyn North from Berkeley. She's written a book from Findhorn Press that talks about imaginative ways of being sustainable on such topics as food, waste, water, and money. Carolyn is also a longtime activist. She's the founder of the Daily Bread Project of Berkeley, which helps put surplus food into the hands of people who need it using a network of volunteers. Welcome, Carolyn.
Well, thank you so much.
Let's start with the title of your book, please. How, in this doom and gloom age where we worry about the Earth's future, can you propose that we have serious fun?
Well, I actually think it's essential. This is a doom and gloom time, but I think it's also a time of change, of really major shift. And we can think of what is happening to us either with despair, or we can think of it as an opportunity to reframe the way we live. And we live a very material life with a lot of stress. And what I'm suggesting is that we do the opposite, that we live in a very low-tech way to the extent that we can, and that we have as much fun as possible in the process. And what this does, aside from a lot of other things, is that it helps to raise the vibration. And people having a good time are basically happier, and the whole tenor of life and relationships tends to go up. And that is what will save us ultimately, I believe, is that ability to defy the odds and to enjoy this time of great challenge.
We can understand what you mean by the serious part. Could you give us an example of what you mean by fun? I assume it's not just whimsical, but it's serious fun.
Yes, it is serious fun. It's so let's take, for example, the fact that we are having a crisis with fresh water in the world. Mm-hmm. So we need to find ways of saving water and of being very conscious of it. So a for example thing would be that when you need to water your plants, instead of taking fresh water from the tap, what you do is you bring your plants into the shower with you. So I call that showers into flowers. And with a little bit of imagination, you can do that with a lot of things. Like, for example, I collect water in our bathroom sink from face washing and hand washing and toothbrushing, and then use that to flush the toilet rather than mm-hmm. flushing the toilet with fresh water. And with a little imagination, you can do that in a million ways.
I think you talked, too, about collecting the cold water before your shower starts to run hot. It just produces a half gallon or so every time you turn on the shower.
Exactly. And then so you collect that in a bucket, and then what I do is I use that to water the rose bushes. And sometimes what I do is just pour it out the upstairs window because mm-hmm. there's a climbing rose right beneath the window. And that always brings interesting comments from the neighbors.
Sure.
So, you know, all of these things, especially the ones that you do a little more publicly, are an opportunity to connect with whoever happens to be around and to also explain why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Right, right. Could you talk a little bit? Your argument is that working for environmental sustainability is analogous to natural adaptation in the plant and animal worlds. What is our adaptation like? And how is it like what plants and animals do?
Well, as I understand the natural cycles in any ecology, take a forest, for example, what happens is that the trees and the plants drop their dead material, which then becomes mulch for everything that is living on the forest floor. The same with the animals. They leave all their waste materials, including their own bodies, when they die. And all of this goes right back into the nutrient cycle for everything else living in the forest. So there's this endless balanced cycle between oneself, whoever one is, mm-hmm. and everything else around. And as humans, we've got to do the same thing, I mm-hmm. think. Mm-hmm. And we don't have that consciousness, which is really a shame.
Right.
You know, our consciousness is like the economy is endless growth. Well, anybody who looks at the natural right. world knows that that's not healthy for anybody.
Right.
So why we would think it would be healthy for an economy, I've never been able to figure out.
It seems like we've gotten so far away from natural processes. That is, we've surrounded ourselves with so much technology, and there's so much sort of standing between us and the ground, or
right.
standing between us and the sky, and all of those ways of getting naturally involved and or feeling or being a part of that cycle. And I'm wondering if you're visualizing some sort of change that helps us be more on the ground or be more attached to the environment. Do you envision it?
I think it's absolutely essential.
Uh-huh.
And I think we've lost it partly because our mindset, the consciousness of the culture, is so material
right.
that it has sort of forgotten that mm-hmm. we are animal bodies, but we're also spirits.
Right.
And we're spirits in a natural setting. You know, without the natural world, we wouldn't exist. We're part of the natural world. So treating the natural world as if it were a commodity, as if we could exploit it for our own personal or, you know, even the gain of our species is just wrong.
Right, right.
And so it's destined to get everybody into trouble sooner mm-hmm. or later. And I think what's happened is we've reached that trouble point, which I find on the one hand terrifying, and on the mm-hmm. other hand, it's like finally we've reached it.
Right.
Because
right.
now we can ask these questions and take a look at who we are and how we're living and see if we can reconfigure how we do it so that we can live and so can everything else.
We puzzle on this show quite a bit in talking with people from every kind of area of environmental concern, from population to water to agriculture to air to so forth and so on, about how to move forward in that, because it seems like when I venture into stores one way or another, it doesn't feel like most people have that consciousness. And so one of the things we always ask is, how is that consciousness? I mean, I think it could come by disaster, but are there other ways that you see that consciousness changing, that you see people actually realizing that this is not going to work indefinitely? It's not going to work very long, what we've done to surround ourselves
yeah,
with crap.
That's right. Here's the way I have decided to address it, and it's with humor, because everybody likes to laugh,
mm-hmm.
and people are really frightened, as well they might be, of getting too serious about their lives in the world. They're also afraid
True.
Of letting go of what they've got. But by demonstrating the fun aspect, the pleasure aspect of doing it differently, the simplicity aspect of doing it differently, what I'm hoping to do is to catch people's willing attention.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That
and that's what
me.
Daily Bread was, actually. Mm-hmm. And Daily Bread was started in the early 80s. And my idea was to demonstrate sharing. Very simple. Just pick up food that was surplus in food businesses and bring it to food kitchens where people needed it,
mm-hmm.
and use ordinary citizens, you know, people who were willing to do a little bit but not much,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yep. as the runners of this food. And it worked so well, I mean, much better than I ever could have imagined, that it's still going. It's almost 26
nice.
Years,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Nice.
And it works without a budget. That's the other thing I wanted to
okay.
to sort of see if it worked, if people were willing to do this, say, 1 hour a week of picking up food and delivering it. and getting to know the folks in the kitchens of the restaurants, as well as the people in the who were in the feeding programs.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out to be such a heart warmer for everybody involved. You know, it turned out to be fun.
Nice. Yeah, great.
This also gives us a hint of your position on money. The opening chapter, the first major chapter in your book is about money, which we don't usually think about in terms of sustainability, at least not parallel to water and waste and so forth. Tell us about sustainable money, please.
Well, I guess my immediate answer to that is that I would like money to go away altogether.
Mm-hmm.
That is to say that we don't tend to ask ourselves what money is.
Mm-hmm.
We think of money as a thing, and it's really not.
Right.
It's just a means of people exchanging and sharing with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go back to the basics, which is, you know, what it is that money buys, it buys our survival necessities. Well, many of those survival necessities, like eating and like shelter, are much more easily done if you have an agreement, if you live in community, basically,
mm-hmm. Right.
And have an agreement with your neighbors that you're going to share it. You're going to grow some of the food together. You're going to cook for each other when, we do it with our neighbors. We live next to a family where both parents work, two little kids, and sometimes they get home from work and they're just too exhausted to cook.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I will do almost automatically is I'll cook a double dinner.
Nice.
And bring half of it over. And
nice.
Then on the weekends when they're baking apple pies, they'll do the same.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's sort of understood that there we don't all have to do every single act to survive on our own. And I think that, you know, we are such a nation of individualists that we forget that we are all in this together.
You also write about generosity. This is not just hard-nosed bartering, but generosity is involved in the whole process of what you call slow money.
Yeah, I think it's a natural way to live, to provide with an open heart for each other, and everybody feels better when you do that. Everybody feels good about themselves, and you know, we humans need to feel good about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And we don't give ourselves that many opportunities to do that.
Right.
And so very simple, ordinary generosity will really help not only the person who's the recipient, but the person who's the giver. And then if everybody's doing that in one way or another, it doesn't have to be huge,
mm-hmm.
but just that little gesture that says, I see you and I care.
And it goes against the culture that you were describing earlier that always says, well, what am I going to get back from this? You don't ask that question
exactly.
when you're being generous.
Exactly. But in a funny kind of ironic way, what tends to happen is you get it back anyhow.
Yes, yes.
Because,
mm-hmm. right.
you know, nobody, when you leave a rose at the door of somebody who's just lost a parent, say, they will never forget that.
Mm-hmm.
And you're always special in their eyes. And so when they have the opportunity, they will do that. You know, they will do something kind for you as well. So it basically raises the kindness quotient.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Right.
And we've become a very mean, frightened society.
Mm-hmm.
And anything that will get us out of that, anything that will shift that, is what I'm for. And that's why I'm proposing having fun, you know, having serious fun. So dealing with the really hard stuff of our time, but in tiny little, ordinary, low-tech, everyday ways.
Can we talk a little bit more about some of those low-tech, ordinary ways? You talked a little bit about the Daily Bread Project. You also give the advice to play with your food. What do you mean by that?
What do I mean with? Oh, dear. I guess you've gotten it that I really like to play with everything.
Yeah.
Uh, That's more for kids than for adults, although adults can do it too. I mean, you can think of food as an art material, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, one of the examples I give is my good friend Adrian Robinson, who creates bread sculptures, very elaborate bread sculptures, and actually used to teach bread sculpting to her children. She was an art teacher for many years. It's a sculpting medium, and you can do anything you want with it. Mm-hmm. You can go totally wild. Doesn't cost very much. And then you put it in the oven, out comes this magnificent work of art, which you then eat up.
I've been proposing for years an oatmeal sculpture contest, and I can't get any takers, so perhaps I'll come down to Berkeley
and
we'll have a festival for that, yes.
So that's sort of what I mean by playing with your food.
Yeah.
It's just be more imaginative. This is all about creativity as well.
There's a wonderfully creative gizmo on the cover of your book, a water collecting gadget. Could you tell us about that, please?
Well, that was built by Christina Bertia, this genius she's a plumber. And she takes rainwater very, very seriously. And what it is a large barrel with a huge tin sculpture of a petaled flower.
Mm-hmm.
And what that acts as is a large-mouthed funnel. So you can place it, you know, in the middle of your garden or wherever you want, and it will catch the rain and then funnel it right into the barrel. And here in California, where we have very wet winters and very dry summers, she has a secondary set of petals that are not made of tin, but are like a clothes drying rack. You know, they have strings across.
Yep.
So
mm-hmm.
in the summertime, it acts as a clothes dryer. And in the wintertime, it's a water catcher.
And you said it makes pleasurable sounds as well when the rain is falling on those tin leaves.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. It sounds a bit like your wonderful orchestra that led in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that we sort of touched on earlier, or another thing we sort of touched on earlier, was how, you know, in the natural cycle of things, excrement goes into the ground, dead animal bodies go into the ground. It's part of, you know, sort of keeping the ground rich. And so what should humans be doing about that? And what about if we have, like, cats and dogs and stuff?
Yeah.
Like
I don't know. Well, I think it's actually a good idea to pick up after your cats and dogs, but I wish we could do it with biodegradable bags rather than plastic bags.
Right, mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
And, you know, in the early days of human history and where there aren't these huge conglomerations of people, people did leave their excrement. I mean, they had special places for it.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But it went back to the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And we're now kind of too many people and living in a city. It's not so realistic.
No,
however,
right.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people working with what they call humanure,
mm-hmm.
which is composting toilets that have ways of turning the human excrement back into sweet-smelling soil.
Mm-hmm.
And how, you know, I try and imagine how that might work in New York City in seven-story buildings, and I can't quite see it.
Yeah, right. We have a farm, and our son and daughter-in-law have built their own composting toilet, and it works great when you live on a farm.
Yeah, when you live on a farm and there aren't too many of you.
Uh-huh, right. But
so,
yeah.
You know, I don't really know what the answer is for larger population sectors, but people are working on it,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and I have hopes for the future.
Mm-hmm.
I think we, you know, at the moment, in fact, we are the only species that does not leave our excrement to go back into the
mm-hmm.
earth, and that's kind of a problem.
Mm-hmm. Right, it's creating some.
And you also, on the same topic, you talk about our bodies, kind of a taboo subject. What could we do with our own corpses when our time has come?
Well, it's a good question. Using up more land for interment
right.
mm-hmm. in caskets really makes no sense whatsoever
right.
for anybody.
Right.
I'm thinking the ocean. You know, it'd be good food for the sharks. But I don't know. I really don't know. What they do in places like Tibet is they allow the flesh to go back into the food system via vultures.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that makes an awful lot of sense. But, again, in Kansas City, I can't quite see it working. So, however, I think the first thing we need to do is just address these things as problems.
Right.
We're very ingenious. I mean, as a species, if we can get to the moon and we mm-hmm. can do all these amazing high-tech things that we do, I think we could figure this out if we gave it some attention.
So do you think we can adapt fast enough to avoid the disasters that seem to us, after talking to all the people we have, that seem to be right around the corner? Do you think we are ready to do that?
Well, it depends who you say we is.
Yeah, right.
I think indeed many of us are not going to survive, but I don't think that all of us will not survive.
Mm-hmm.
I think we are in for really tough times. And, you know, look at what's happening around the world with tsunamis and earthquakes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, the earth is taking care of herself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that may mean that many of us get kind of kicked off.
Yeah.
But I don't think all of us will get kicked off. And I think that those of us who are willing to face the realities of this change that is coming upon us, recognizing the change, recognizing a direction that we must go in order to assist this change in happening,
mm-hmm.
Many of us will do quite well.
Mm-hmm.
And I also feel that for myself, I have to believe that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I mean, I have children. I've got grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not willing to say it's all over,
mm-hmm.
and I also don't think it is. I don't think we're alone in the universe. I think the human experiment on this planet is something that will not be allowed to disappear by whatever agents I have. I have no idea what I'm talking about, really.
Mm-hmm.
But I have very deep faith that we're here for a purpose and that we will be allowed to fulfill that purpose.
So your final topic in the book is about home.
Mm-hmm.
Home, the structure, the community. How is that a sustainability issue for you?
For me personally? I mean, I live in a city where there are many homeless people. And I look at what we've done. We have, on the one hand, people living on the streets, begging for a spare change. And on the other hand, we have these McMansions, these mm-hmm. enormous yeah. places where that are too big for, you know, just about anybody, really.
Right.
And not all that much in between. And so I think we really have to rethink the notion of, first of all, separate dwellings
mm-hmm.
for every family.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to change the density of how we live
mm-hmm.
so that we're not taking up all the land that should be either in natural wildness or growing food
mm-hmm.
by plunking houses down one after the other after the other. I mean, I think we have to rethink and reframe how we live on the earth. And that's what I was really trying to get at in that
right,
chapter.
Right.
How do we live on the earth? How are we doing it now? And how might it change? And the book I'm working on now actually is the sequel to Serious Fun,
yes.
in which I'm doing essentially talking about the consciousness, but also doing a utopia. I'm describing... Uh-huh. A family after about three generations after the whole economy falls apart and we have all the mayhem, and that I believe is going to happen. But the picking up the pieces and recreating how we live according to a very different notion of what is important and how we relate to the natural world and to each other.
That will be exciting. The title of that book is Shift Happens, How Changing Your Mind Can Help Save the World. That one will also be published by Findhorn Press. And Carolyn, you've been following up the Serious Fun book. You're about to launch a website that our listeners, I think, would be interested in. Could you tell us about that, please?
Oh, yes. Actually, we're doing it right now. It's Christina Bertia and I. She is the maker of the wild rain catcher fountain and many other things.
Oh, wow. Nice.
What we want to do is to create a blog, basically, in which we will put every ingenious idea under the headings of the same headings as the book, you know, money, food, wastewater, home. And then encourage other people to do so as well. So that what we want to do, Christina said to me yesterday, it's like a matchmaking service.
Yes.
Yeah, that's cool.
You know,
right.
Meet other people who think the same way you do.
Nice.
So it's a meeting place for ingenious folks who can put out what it is they're thinking and what it is they're doing, and also ask out there, is there anybody else interested in, for example, Nick Bertulis is this marvelous guy who has created a garden called Peeponics. And
nice.
What you do is you urinate into this thing, which then gets wicked up into the level where the plants are growing. So you are putting phosphorus back into the soil that's growing food. I mean, that kind of ingenious thing just tickles me.
That sounds really great.
It's great. So that's what we're trying. That's what this blog will be. It can be found on the Findhorn Press website.
Findhorn, okay.
Findhorn,
yeah. And it's not up yet. We're still forming it. Neither of us are good on the computer, so we need a lot of help to do this. But once it's up, I expect we and everybody else who comes on will have a wonderful time. And I can hardly wait to see who falls in love with whom as a result of it.
Great. Our guest has been Carolyn North. She is the author of Serious Fun, published by Findhorn Press, and that's at findhornpress.com. And her blog will be up there soon, and it's on recycled paper that, according to the publisher, saved 5 trees and 519 pounds of greenhouse gases. Carolyn's mentioned that her new book will be called Shift Happens, How Changing Your Mind Can Help Save the World. And in addition to the forthcoming blog, she has two websites that you should check out, www.healingimprovisations.net and Carolyn North, it's Carolyn North. blogspot.com, and we've posted those links on our website, ecotopiakzfr.net. Thank you so much, Carolyn. It's really been a fun conversation.
Oh, I've enjoyed it very much.
Thanks.
And thank you so much for doing this.
Uh-huh.
Great, thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
It's a magic number. Yes, it is. It's a magic number. Because 2 times 3 is
6.
And 3 times 6 is
18.
And the 18th letter in the alphabet is
R.
Yeah. We got 3 R's we're gonna talk about today. We gotta learn to reduce, reuse, recycle. Reduce, reuse, recycle. Reduce, reuse, recycle. Reduce, reuse, recycle. Well, if you're going to the market to buy some juice, you gotta bring your own bags and you learn to reduce your waste. We gotta learn to reduce. And if your brother or your sister's got some cool clothes, you could try them on before you buy some more of those. Reuse. We gotta learn to reuse. And if the first 2 R's don't work out, and if you gotta make some trash, well, don't throw it out. Recycle. We gotta learn to recycle. We gotta learn to reduce, reuse, recycle.
recycle. Reduce, reuse, recycle. Reduce, reuse, recycle. Reduce, reuse, recycle. Because three, it's a magic number. Yes, it is. It's a magic number.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR. Tonight, our topic is serious fun. We've enjoyed talking with Carolyn North, and we'll also be talking tonight with two local folks from the RARE Project at Chico State. Marley Zalay is the coordinator of the RARE Project. Desi Hatton, assistant with that project. Welcome to Ecotopia.
Thanks for having us.
Please tell us first, what does RARE, R-A-R-E, what's the acronym stand for?
It stands for the Recycling and Rubbish Exhibit.
Okay. And tell us a little bit about its history, please.
Well, RARE has been around for 10 years. The exhibit was a traveling exhibit. It started off at the Discovery Science Museum in Sacramento.
Oh.
And it made its way throughout the United States from 1992 to 1996. And then a Chico State student decided to have it housed permanently in Chico.
So that, no kidding.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it was it was first shown in 2000, and this is our 10th year of having tours there.
So who sponsors RARE? Is it a project of
So we're a Butte County funded program.
Oh, okay.
And we provide recycling education for all of Butte County. Free educational tours and workshops, and that satisfies their integrated waste management plan, which mm-hmm. is a mandate for all California counties.
And can you tell us a little bit about some of the exhibits? What do you show? And
We have a bunch of interactive and hands-on exhibits. There's the anatomy of a landfill, composting mm-hmm. with worms, electronic and hazardous waste. We also have recycling around the world. We have a 6-foot-tall garbage can. And my personal favorite, the walk-through compost pile.
So, tell more.
Yeah. Steve and I have been saying we need to try to get a tour of this because I'm having a little trouble visualizing. So maybe you can just describe the whole setup.
Well, we have the exhibits were originally the traveling mm-hmm. exhibits, and we've added displays over the years. And we house them in a warehouse owned by Recology. It's located on 3097 Southgate Lane, just south of Chico, right off Highway 99.
Mm-hmm.
And we operate by appointment, so anybody who wants to come, if you guys want to come, or if classes want to come, teachers email us, and we schedule appointments for tours.
Great.
And so, the facility, I understand, is huge.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great big thing. So tell me give me a little walking tour of it.
Okay. So you walk in, you can go, there's a green carpet where we have the class sit, we give a little presentation, they can walk around, there's a reuse area that displays a lot of really interesting reuse crafts that interns have made throughout the years.
Oh, fun.
Things like things you might have played with when you were young, the cans with the string in
it. Yeah.
Okay.
As the telephones.
Right.
And things that you would make out of trash, crafts you can make out of trash.
Okay.
To try to reduce our waste stream. And there's a actual little display of a landfill, our own little mini landfill. And we talked to the kids about all the different kinds of trash that are in landfill that should be recycled. Like 50% of the landfill is actually paper that should all be recycled or reused.
50%. Mm-hmm. Is that true for Butte County?
Yeah, I believe so.
Wow, mm-hmm. That's amazing.
I take our stuff to the landfill, find the place endlessly fascinating. The roads change, but there's a scary amount of stuff that should never be there, including a lot of our own, I'm afraid, but mm-hmm. Stuff that should never wind up in the landfill. It's still useful.
Yeah.
So there's the landfill, and what else would we see?
And
will we see when we come?
Yeah, and juxtaposed to the landfill is, like Desi said, the walk-through compost pile.
Oh, okay.
So we have some youngsters that can walk through. It's breezy. There's air flow. It should be like an aerobic compost pile, mm-hmm. and they can pretend they're a worm or a decomposer going through the compost pile.
So is that over their heads?
There's a mesh ceiling over the top. Yeah.
And do you add stuff to it periodically? Is that how the pile functions?
Well, it's actually not. You know, it's just a display.
This is a display.
So
okay.
We're not
so
actually composting.
A faux compost.
You're not, yeah, okay. They're not walking through a real compost.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Wow. That would be really cool, though.
Yeah, that would be really cool, but they might be a little smelly after
okay. You might get some health warnings.
And something that you mentioned, a lot of stuff gets thrown away, and that's actually our motto at RARE. It's one person's trash is another person's treasure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes. That's our motto.
Right. So what are some other visuals that
some
we can
other visuals.
Bring to
actually,
this?
There's a really awesome display. Looks kind of like a chest of drawers, but each drawer contains trash through different decades. So we have a drawer with trash from 1900s, rusted cans and old papers.
My gosh.
You see the trash change in the 60s. We've got, you know, starting to get plastics. And then we see in the 80s, the 90s, more and more disposables. And all the kids recognize this is their era. We have so many disposable cups, CDs, things that aren't made to be reused or recycled. And then there's a drawer that represents zero waste is our future. And hopefully we'll be creating less trash. That's our goal, is reducing trash and inspiring the younger generation to be aware of this.
So what are kids' reactions? Are they surprised, or is this something that they sort of know about because they've heard about it? Or
they get really excited when they come to the exhibit. It's really fun to watch, actually, because they're learning so much and it's so hands-on that they just get super excited when they get to check everything out. It's a lot of fun to be able to be a part of that. And you could just watch them learn a lot. And when you lead the workshops, it's just great to watch them and listen to them, because they ask great questions and they actually know a lot already. And they are, it's amazing. Mm-hmm.
And as Steve and I know, you probably don't know this yet, but kids are great change agents because they start harassing their parents. We shouldn't buy this. We shouldn't throw this away. This isn't good. We should get bottles that we can refill instead of. My brother buys cases of plastic water bottles, and I've just been on his case whenever I go there. And I got him clean canteens. Actually, they were for sale in Hilo, Hawaii, were clean canteens. And so instead of bringing them from their home, I bought them in Hilo, Hawaii, and said, please use these. And he said he would. So, yeah, but kids are really good at kind of trying.
As are little sisters like you.
Yes. Then. I didn't understand that. But oh, little sisters like me.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. And you also do workshops in the school. Tell us about those and how they came about.
So we also, usually a class will come out to the exhibit, and then we'll either do a pre or post tour or in-class workshop after the tour. So we'll go into the classrooms, and we can either do a 4 R's workshop, which is reduce, reuse, recycle, and rot.
Rot. Fourth R.
That's our fourth R.
Right.
And one of our favorites.
Right.
Rot. And we also do worm bin workshops, so we can go into the classrooms and start a worm bin for the classrooms, and they get to have a new class pet.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, Desi, you were the first person who taught me composting.
Yeah.
I was a novice composter. So.
Yeah, worm bins are great.
Yeah, and composting, just garden waste. And so how long are those workshops? What goes on there?
They're about an hour and a half, and just a way to reinforce the concepts learned at the exhibit.
And do you take compost, take all of the materials in with you?
Yeah, we provide a plastic bin, a handful of worms, a good amount to start a worm bin with. Sometimes we'll provide a snack for the kids, or a snack. Kids can put in scraps from their snack that they've just recently eaten to feed the worms. We shred newspaper and talk about the compost recipe and build a new worm home for them so they can continue to compost in class. They can't necessarily do that at home.
Right. Yeah.
And how can teachers get in touch with you if they'd like to make contact? And do you still have opportunities this spring? The school year is kind of running out.
But... Yeah, we do. Our tours and workshops run in accordance or in the same time frame as the Chico State semesters, but we are flexible, and we try to accommodate whenever teachers are available for tours and workshops. So we do have some openings still in the spring, and I encourage anybody to contact us. It doesn't have to be a classroom. Any family could set up a tour with us.
Nice.
And we have homeschool groups and Girl Scout troops and Cub Scouts. So our website is www.aschico.com/recycle/rare, or you can email us directly. Our email is rare@csuchico.edu.
We'll put both of those up on our website, too, in case people didn't write them down.
Thanks.
What's your vision for the future of the project, your best hopes or your worst fears?
Like Marley mentioned, zero waste. Definitely able to incorporate what they learn into their life, and by utilizing the four R's that they learn at the exhibit and integrating that into their lifestyle. And so ultimately changing their lifestyles from, you know, a consumer materialistic culture to one that fosters sustainable habits.
Yeah. And it's also an opportunity for students to get classroom experience. Usually we have a lot of future teachers and educators. And it's a really great experience to be in the classroom, to have experience with kids, and you learn by teaching in some ways.
Right, exactly. Mm. I think it really heightens your consciousness. So how many people do you have working on the RARE project, do you suppose?
Our team right now is 6 staff members.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. And can people volunteer with RARE as well?
Yeah, we love volunteers. We do community events as well, like the Endangered Species Fair,
great,
the Salmon Festival in Oroville, Butte County Fair, and we do recycling outreach in that way. So anybody who wants to volunteer can contact us, and we'd be happy to have extra help.
And give us that email address one more time, because I think that's probably an easy way for people to contact you.
Yeah, our email is rare@csuchico.edu. That's rare@csuchico.edu.
Great. So our guests in this half of the show have been Marley Zalay, who is the coordinator of RARE, and Desi Hatton, who's an assistant. Is that what your position is called? At the RARE project. And we thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us.
Worms crawl, worms wiggle, worms can sometimes make you giggle, but in the end, the worm is our friend. Worms don't grow too much in size, they have no nose, ears, or eyes, but worms are good for the earth, and that's a worm's main worth. They can make the soil richer, easier for things to grow, make lots of fertilizer from the stuff they eat, you know. Put in simplest terms, everyone depends on worms. Worms never offend, the worm is our friend. La, la,
They can make the soil richer, easier for things to grow. Make lots of fertilizer from the stuff they eat, you know. Put in simplest terms, everyone depends on worms. Worms never offend, the worm is our friend. Worms never offend, the worm is our friend.
You're listening to Ecotopia on KZFR. Tonight's program is made possible by generous contributions of KZFR members and by the Chico Artisan Fair, celebrating its 40th anniversary on Saturday, April 30th and Sunday, May 1st. There will be artists and craftspersons from across the country, as well as food and entertainment. Admission is free, starting at 10 a.m. both days in the Chico Downtown Plaza. For more information, please call 345-9652. And we are brought to you by Alternative Energy Systems, a locally owned and operated partnership providing energy for life with sustainable energy. Their information is available on the web at www.solarenergyforlife.com. Alternative Energy Systems offers energy solutions for residential, commercial, and agricultural needs. They can be reached by calling 345-6980.
Me the hope of a new tomorrow, and fill my cup again, sing it with me. Wheel me the sunshine out of the falling, out of the falling. Wheel me the hope of a new tomorrow.